may be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument on Allen Byers versus Milburn Byers.
May it please the court, Mr. Leonard Gittinger will present arguments with Kitchener. Kitchener is there 5 minutes to move on.
Ladies and gentlemen of the court, I am Leonard Gittinger from San Antonio. I represent Allen Byers, who's petitioner to the court. This dispute grows out of a community property settlement agreement entered into by husband and wife back in 1970. And this particular agreement is probably one of the strongest, most complete agreements that I've seen in my years of practice.
Did you draft it, counsel?
No, I did not. I'm sorry to say I can't take credit for that. It's very different than the agreements that are contained in many of the cases which have been construed by the various courts of appeals and indeed by this court on one occasion. The trial court refused to give effect to a residual clause in this partition agreement, and the Court of Appeals, following that, also refused to give effect to it on the basis that even though there was a what I call a true general residual clause, if retirement benefits were not specifically mentioned in that clause, the clause was not effective to convey or to dispose of that particular asset. I think it's important for the court to focus on the terms of the property agreement in this case. And I think it's dispositive of what must be done in the case, or at least what we hope to be done. This agreement has got words of grant and conveyance. Not only is an agreement that one party will have, but in this instrument, each party grants and conveys to the other the property that the other is to receive. The trial court found the agreement to be fair and equitable in its decree. This agreement is not only signed, it is acknowledged by both parties. In paragraph 1 of the dispositive provision in this agreement, it sets aside to the husband a piece of real estate, which is described very specifically by lot and block and plat reference. In paragraph number 2, it awards to the wife all other property, financial assets, and belongings of the parties, separate or community, not specifically awarded to the husband. Following that are words of conveyance. We call this a true residual clause because of the award of all other properties and the enumeration of financial assets and all other belongings. I might tell the court that the decree reflects that these parties had 6 children, that the husband was ordered to support, and he was awarded a piece of real estate, as I stated to the court, in paragraph 1, and that is the only thing that he was awarded in the property agreement or given in the property agreement. What the court must distinguish is this particular clause is not a clause which talks about property in possession of one party. This is not a clause that talks about property in a party's name or subject to a party's control. This is not a clause that talks about property earned by or accumulated by one of the marital partners. This is a clause that says everything else goes to the wife, which is not described in the first paragraph of this agreement. It is difficult for me to imagine a more complete and entire residual clause. This court has had only one occasion that I have been able to find to consider a residual clause of the same general nature as exists in our case, and that's in the Parton versus De Cordova case, which is contained in our brief. In that case, the wife was given a car and her personal belongings and some jewelry, as I recall. The husband received all other property, including but not limited to an equity in a home, and he was ordered to pay the debt on the wife's car. That's the sum and substance of the clause. The controversies in all these cases arise from the fact that the retirement or the insurance policy, which has been treated by the courts, are not enumerated in these residual clauses. The controversy develops later on, well, was this retirement or was this insurance policy covered by this residual clause? In the Parton case, there was no mention of five insurance policies that were part of the community estate of the parties. The Eastland Court said nonetheless that since the clause awarding to the husband all other property existed in this property agreement, it carried with it these five unnamed and unmentioned insurance policies. And this court refused error in that particular case. You didn't write on it, you just refused error. But that's the only case that I have found that this court has ever considered the effect of what I think is a true residual clause. There are any number of other cases by the courts of appeals. The Bloom case, which is cited in our brief, by Tyler, which is a no-writ case. In this case, the clause was in the decree, and it awarded all property not specifically set forth as a separate property in a state of either party to the person in whose name or possession such item of property may be. In this particular case, the retirement had already become payable, and Bloom held that because that retirement was payable and it was in the name of the husband, that his retirement went to him because it was in his name, and the appellate court held that he got that retirement, even though I don't feel that this is a true residual clause in the ordinary sense. It's a much less complete clause than we have in our case. In the Tate case out of Amarillo, which is also a no-writ case, also described in our brief, the property agreement was in existence. Gave the wife quite a bit of property, and then says, and all other community property of the parties not expressly given to the husband. There were several insurance policies in this particular case, and the contention was that they were not covered. The Amarillo court held that the wife got the policies under the clause that says all other community property of the parties.
Counsel, there's a split, obviously, among the Court of Appeals. Why is it not a better rule to rule like the courts of appeals other than San Antonio have ruled, that the general residual clause may divide the retirement benefits? Why isn't that a better rule?
Well, of course, the Court of Appeals of San Antonio, Your Honor, based its decision. We have what have been broadly painted with the widest brush you can imagine, residual clauses, which are really not residual clauses. We have the clauses that say property in a person's possession passes to him. Any number of courts of appeals say that doesn't cover retirement. Retirement can't be possessed.
But if you have a general residual clause, why shouldn't the counterfeit come in for a general residual clause?
We think it should. That is our position in this case.
I say to get counsel, you're arguing for us to get San Antonio in line with El Paso and Houston.
Yes, I'm saying that San Antonio's wrong when they say that this general residual clause passes neither military retirement or civil service retirement. That's what they said.
So if you had been in El Paso and Houston, you would have been on the other side of this issue.
Well, if you'd have been in any number of other places, Dallas also, for that matter, and Amarillo. And those clauses in the cases which we cited the court to are not nearly as complete a clause as we have in our case. As Justice Duncan said in her dissent in our case, if you live in any place but in the Fourth Circuit, you would get your retirement in this case, but you're not getting it here. The significance of it, perhaps, even more so now, is that while our case was in the judicial process, the Congress modified the Former Spouses Protection Act, and it added a clause to it which says, and because of all of the cases going back and trying to divide retirement after the McCarthy decision, which this court has had cases addressed on a number of cases, that they wanted to stop that. And so they have a statute which is set forth verbatim in the Court of Appeals opinion in this case that says that if the trial court did not dispose of or reserve jurisdiction to dispose of military retirement at the time of the regular divorce, the court can't partition it now. Dispose of is not the word they use. The word used is treat or reserve jurisdiction to treat. The Fourth Court has in effect said that if you have a residual clause that gives all of the other property to one of the other spouses, that does not treat military retirement. So the Fourth Court in effect has said they have engrafted on the word treat the fact that it must be specifically mentioned. We think that's erroneous. We think if the parties decide for whatever reason that they want to give specific property to one person and give everything else of any nature to the other, that should be effective. That they have a right, both constitutionally and statutorily, to agree on that, and that the court cannot then say all does not mean all. All means something less than all.
Isn't it far more likely that they just didn't think about it?
Sir?
Isn't it far more likely that they just didn't think about it?
Your Honor, in our motion for rehearing, which provoked Justice Duncan's dissent, we set that out and examined the clauses that they relied on for saying that and pointed out to them that the two cases, Yao and Dunn, are not true residual clauses. They're in possession cases.
But if the husband and wife just don't think about it?
Well, I'm sorry, husband and wife.
Yes. If they don't think about it, should it go by the residuary clause?
I think we have to give credence to the, in our case, there was no attack on the agreement on the basis that it was mistake, fraud, overreaching, or anything. It was never attacked. And so I think we have to look at the instrument, which by the time we filed our suit was already 20 years old.
If it were attacked, I guess you could bring in at that point what the parties were thinking about at the time, at least trying to develop that.
Yes, I think you could attempt to do that, Your Honor, but the question of whether it was a mutual mistake or not a mutual mistake, of course, is an issue.
Now, he was drawing benefits from both of these retirements at the time of the divorce?
He was drawing from neither at the time of the divorce.
But did you say just a few minutes ago that these couldn't be possessed, an annuity couldn't be possessed?
I said that courts of appeals, a number of courts of appeals have said that under a clause which awards property in the possession or one of the other of the spouses, that they have held that retirement does not fit within that category.
If he was not drawing either one of these at the time of the divorce, it would be easy for me to think, but he didn't think that he had it.
Well, If that
would be covered by the residual clause.
Well, sir, of course, in the civil service retirement, he was actually contributing out of his pay, out of his paycheck.
Yes, but he wasn't drawing any benefits from it.
No, he had not qualified yet.
And so he had an anticipation that in some future time that he was going to draw benefits. But in order to divide with his wife, he didn't have anything at that time to divide.
Well, this court has repeatedly held that
I'm talking about his
in his mind
condition.
Your Honor,
whatever that might have been.
I can't address that. I think that had that issue been raised in this partition suit on the basis of mistake or whatever the avoidance defenses might have been, that it might have been litigated, but it was not raised. And there's no point about it in the appellate court.
If we were to rule in your favor, what would be the net effect to your client?
The net effect to my client would be that she would get a portion of the military retirement, which the trial court found to be about 45%, because 18 years of the man was on active duty, and then he went into the active reserve, and he had been between the two about 18 years at the time of divorce. So the court awarded approximately 45% of the retirement to our client in the partition suit. And the Court of Appeals took that away from him.
And that translates to how much money?
By the month, Judge, I do not recall the exact amount. Several hundred dollars a month.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Mr. Gary
Bates,
on
tell you what a great privilege it is for me to address this illustrious body, and this being my first time, I'm in awe of this place, and I thank you for this opportunity. As one counsel,
why should you stand tuned and get in line with the other courts of appeal?
Well, there are several reasons for that, Your Honor, and I would say that they're trying to follow the law. They're trying to follow the law of the land as it has been deemed to be passed down to us.
Anybody else is out of step, but San Antonio.
I would say everyone who disagrees with Title 10, 1408, C1 is out of step with that. And I will tell you why. And if the court, I'd like to base this somewhat on my personal experience with this particular act and my personal experience with this law. I have been a member of the U.S. military since 1975 as a judge advocate. I was stationed in Texas, coming from Kansas originally, and first met the first brush of this military retirement with Busby versus Busby in 1970. I watched the evolution of military, the tortured evolution of military retirement pay as we struggled with the concept, whether or not this was community property at all. When we tried to follow California rules, it says we're going to, this is a in the early middle 1970s, said that this was an asset to be divided upon time of retirement, not on time of divorce. Searley case settled that in 1981. We watched McCarty come in, which destroyed our history of precedence in the 1970 cases. I had a Supreme Court case, Court of Appeals case, Supreme Court, King Supreme Court case. At that particular time, that stood at the point of race judicata, don't destroy the decrees we had back in 1970. The espousal law comes in 1981. 1989, Mansell versus Mansell comes in, destroys those aspects. And then in 1990 comes the aberration, if it were, under Texas law of 1408C1. And I said I had personal experience with that is because I sat on a legislative committee for the American Bar Association as a subcommittee member giving evidence to a military committee in Washington and had to draft a paper to present, pleading with that body not to put this language in this decree because it can have exactly the same effect as we're here today. And it's our contention, and we agree with the Court of Appeals, says that 1408 prevents the treatment or the disposition or division of military pay that was not treated at the day of divorce. In saying all this, if we take our own experiences, and this august body's experience back to 1970, when I said we had this torture thing, how could anybody believe that in 1970 these kind of technical questions could have been even conceived by the parties back then? Mr. Byers was unrepresented by counsel. And I would disagree with counsel when he says, what's the net effect? It is your question. What's the net effect if we rule in your favor? The net effect under his theory is not that she would get 48%. She would get the entire thing. Because all property not awarded to him in this decree was awarded to her. If you read that residual clause, it didn't say in the part of the parties, but that's where the language, which is unusual, to say the least, that all party not awarded to him goes to her, all property.
But to be clear about this, the trial court only awarded her half of the amount attributable to the period of time they were married. Is that
following Greer versus Greer, division words.
And your argument is if he had followed the clause itself, he should have given her all of that.
That's right. And I'm saying...
But she didn't get any part attributable to the time after the divorce.
Not really, no. And again, I don't like this law. I mean, I'm sorry to say, from a personal standpoint, I don't like this law. I represent many wives groups in this particular fashion. If a wife comes into me, and I had hundreds of them come in and say, I have a pre-1981 divorce decree that did not provide military retirement pay, my answer has been, I don't think you can go back and do that, and I turn them aside. Now, what is the ultimate effect of if this court says, yes, this is a divisible order, what happens to this order? What happens to this? An order is sent to DFAS. DFAS is the Defense Finance and Accounting Service in Cleveland, Ohio. They deny it under this particular clause. Airman 1, I've said this in all the other courts, there is one mythical airman that is sitting up there and taking this order saying, Texas can't do this, and denies her relief. And a good example of that, corollary to this, is the definition of disposable pay. Before 1990, disposable pay was defined as, in the military, as net pay. That was after taxes. After these changes, it was defined as gross pay before taxes. All right. Well, what effect did that have? Well, Texas has always held that disposable pay means gross pay. If you take that order and you send it up to DFAS, DFAS sends you net pay, leaving the wife or the non-military spouse the problem of trying to collect that difference between gross pay and the net pay, quote unquote, from the member spouse who may be well gone. But again, and the point of that, I guess, is showing that the government, in their empirical body, decides what they're going to do with it. And they have ruled, the person has ruled that clause precedes recovery.
Are you saying that no matter what we do, they're going to...
I don't want to put it that way, but I believe that's the case.
If that's the case, why is that the case? As Mr. Gittinger argued, if this had been decided out of the Dallas Court of Appeals or El Paso or Houston or Tyler, do they likewise refuse those?
No, I'm just saying, I don't mean that. I mean, I'm saying as it results to the treating of 1408C, because those cases recognize that that's a complete bar to treating military pay decided before 1980. I'm not saying that they're going to approve a Dallas or an El Paso court over that. I'm just saying that they're looking at the statute. The statute implicitly says, and the word is treat, and there's no definition. I mean there's no treating of this particular event, the military retirement pay, at least, in that decree anywhere. It's not mentioned. And I think that...
So what your position is it has to be mentioned?
It has to be mentioned. It has to be
mentioned. All property doesn't include...
Does not include
those items that are not explicitly mentioned?
That's right. That's my position. And I think that's the Texas court's position on this thing. I'm saying that... And that is only, it flies in the face of Texas law, it flies in the face of Greer versus Greer, it flies in the face of all the history of Texas. I'm waxing here, I don't mean to be, but I'm just saying if good, bad, or indifferent, that's the law, and the Supremacy Clause dictates that we have to follow. And with that, Your Honor, the other questions I think raised by counsel in his brief, regarding the pre-judgment interest, we adopt, of course, the fact that there was no judgment. Interest goes after the date of judgment, and adopt the case decided by the Court of Appeals, Anderson versus Anderson.
Mr. Bean, let me ask you, you do agree, regardless of how this case comes out, this is an important issue under Texas law.
I think it's crucial to Texas law. I think I think we need to send, or you need to send a message to us practitioners as to what your opinion is, good, bad, or indifferent, to unclog the courts with other hearings.
I guess particularly folks living in San Antonio with the number of civil service and military retirees, this affects a lot of people and not just the parties in this case.
That's right, and I think my practice is 80% military, I think, in practice with these kind of problems. And it's very disturbing, and if I could just take a moment, it's very disturbing, and there are other questions which we're not getting into here, of course. There are other serious questions looming in light of the drawdown. And other things that are coming up for your consideration would be interesting in the future.
Steve, is there a federal case anywhere that stands for the proposition that military pay has to be specifically mentioned in the original divorce decree?
Not to my knowledge as of yet, and I do not know of any federal cases as yet.
It's your position that the statute as written is what dictates that military pay has to be specifically mentioned in the...
Yes, the 1990 amendment specifically.
Counsel, is it your position that if you prevail, that you get all of the retirement?
I have not sought to get all of the retirement, the military retirement.
Why not?
Nor did the trial court. Pardon me?
Why not?
Well, I probably should have. hope I don't get sued for malpractice or not.
What did you ask for in the trial court?
We asked that the court enforce the property settlement agreement and that the court determine the amount to which we were entitled, both in a declaratory judgment action and in a suit for breach of contract.
Which the court did.
The trial court held that the settlement agreement did not divide either the civil service or the military, and proceeded to divide it on the basis that the court felt was equitable based upon the years of marriage and the years of service. That's what the court did. We have not asked this court to change the award of the amount of civil service that was awarded by the trial court and which was affirmed by the Court of Appeal. We have asked that this court set aside the judgment of the Court of Appeals that in effect holds that in order to treat retirement, you must specifically mention it. Now, the court needs to understand, the statute does not have a definition that Mr. Bain is talking about, does not define what the word treat means. The jurisprudence of the state of Texas, in the cases that are cited in our brief, has held that a residual clause does convey or award insurance unmentioned, undescribed, undisclosed in the paperwork. Insurance policies, private retirement, there's one case that deals with an ARCO retirement, civil service retirement, military retirement, retainer pay. These true residual clauses have been construed by the courts of Texas to award, and I say, under the jurisprudence of Texas, to treat those retirements as awarded under those clauses.
So the bottom line, this thing for us is that this court should reinstate the trial court's decision.
That's in effect what we're asking the court to do. And we're also asking for prejudgment interest. Although I didn't argue that, but based on your several cases, your roofing case, that you said equity requires it, that this man put us through. He wouldn't do anything. He forced us to go through the trial. He filed a counterclaim. We were forced into appeal. He's kept all the money. He's never paid any of the military retirement, even while the trial court's order was in effect. The only reason we've gotten any of the civil services is because we were able to garnish that, or to the judgment was honored by the civil service. If you do not hold, in this case, that a true residual clause, as we have in our case, does award unmentioned assets, including retirement, what's going to happen then is that all the spouses who are now receiving retirement pay from the military, based upon residual clauses that were decided before this statute was enacted are going to be in trouble. And I urge this court, this court needs to hold, to avoid that problem, that a true residual clause does treat it just as it treats any other asset that is unmentioned. It's foolish to say you have a residual clause, but yet you have to enumerate everything that's covered by that residual clause. It loses its purpose.
Counsel, I don't understand. You say we ought to do that, but it's all right in this instance. Go back to where the trial court left it.
Yes, sir. I urge the court.
For us to say that is the law that applies to all future cases. You're saying that in all future cases, the residual clause will take care of all that.
It will.
But in this case, we ought to go back and read.
That seems to be a contradiction, and I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not trying to be piggish about this. I'm not trying to take away all of this man's retirement. I'm satisfied with what the trial court did because I think it's equitable. The trial court didn't give us any attorney's fees, and this court didn't grant a writ on that. But I do think we're entitled to prejudgment interest, just as in this case, the amount weren't known, just as in the roofing case. Nobody knew what the amount of damage was.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. These two cases submitted on the briefs and oral argument. The marshal will return to the court.